The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Well, the story of Terry Schindler Schiavo caused a massive uproar that garnered the attention of the worldwide media, the U.S. Congress, and even the Office of the President of the United States. As the third anniversary of her death approaches, the ethical and cultural implications of her case are still being felt throughout society and continue to spark much debate. Hosted by author and speaker Johnny Erickson Tada, former guest on our show as well, who became personally involved in the case in 2005, the Terry Schiavo story certainly sheds new light on the controversial decision that led to the death of a 41-year-old disabled woman. Terry's brother, Bobby Schindler, was interviewed at length in this documentary and is now involved in helping families in similar circumstances through the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation. Bobby believes that the truth about his sister's death has been distorted and hidden until now. And as a matter of fact, he even gave up his teaching job after Terry's death and became a full-time pro-life and disability rights advocate. He's spoken out in defense of his sister's life on numerous national television and radio programs, including Hannity and Combs, Larry King Live, The Oprah Winfrey Show, The Glenn Beck Show, Good Morning America. I mean, he's just been all over the place, and he has held his own. He has actually come across quite sharply in the media, and he joins us today. Bobby, thanks for your time.
Well, thank you for having me, Mr. Marshall. I appreciate it.
Listen, this is still quite a passionate story in many people's minds. However, it waned a little bit in as I was reflecting on it, and then I watched this documentary, and boy, did it trigger stuff in me again, real quick, man.
Well, Johnny just did a tremendous job on this documentary, and I can't tell you how pleased our family was and delighted that she took the time to put this together, because as you said, it really does shed light on many of the facts that are still to this day being distorted by our secular media.
Well, and you held your own. You are, every time I've seen you speak in front of the media, you come across very, very sharp, and I just want to give you some kudos for that. Can you take us back to the day when Terry, I guess, collapsed in her apartment?
Sure. It was on February 25th, 1990. Terry was 26 years old, and it's still unexplained. My father received a phone call from Michael very early in the morning, and saying that something had happened to Terry. She collapsed, and my dad got me on the phone because we lived in the same apartment complex, so I was there within minutes. And I found Terry unconscious on the floor and unresponsive. And when the paramedics got there, I knew there was something seriously wrong, because they hit her with the defibrillator, so probably half a dozen times to try to get her heart started. So what happened to Terry that night is still unexplained, and I don't know that we'll ever find out what was the cause of Terry's collapse that night.
You know, very few of us know who she was as a sister. I mean, you and her were 13 months apart, correct?
Yes, we're very close.
She loved animals. She was an artist. She was rather shy. She struggled with weight earlier on in life, and you were the middle child, right? You were the younger brother. There was another sibling that was younger than you as well. What's her name again?
Suzanne.
Suzanne, that's right. And have you and Suzanne processed this grief differently, or would you say you're kind of all on the same page as a family?
Well, we've certainly been on the same page as far as defending Terry's life, and now we've taken this issue and we're trying to help other families. But I think we all handle it in different ways. I've pretty much engrossed myself in the foundation, and I often say there's really not a day that goes by where I don't think of Terry. She's the first thing on my mind when I wake up in the morning, and the last thing on my mind before I go to bed, and I'm just trying to constantly think of ways to raise awareness, educate people, and help other families now that are going through the same type of ordeal that our family went through.
Okay, well, this whole thing kind of fell apart, I think, when there was a malpractice lawsuit awarded $20 million in 1993 to Michael, and then I guess somewhere down the line, Michael changed his mind and decided that Terry probably would not want to live like this, and so we need to do what we can to let her go, and then I'm going to move on with the $20 million. That sounds a bit crass, but is that how it went down?
Well, he was suing for $20 million. Now, the jury came back and awarded significantly less, but it was still a lot of money. It was upwards of $1.5 million, and that's essentially what happened. And I think, Mr. Marshall, it's important to remind people that, and I didn't mention it when I talked about Terry's collapse, but when she collapsed, she went without oxygen for several minutes, and that's what caused her profound brain injury. But her brain injury, from that moment on, she was really dependent on others for her care, but she was never dying. Terry's cognitive brain injury was never going to cause her death, and she was only being sustained by the same thing that sustains all of us, which is food and water. Now, it was delivered a little different. It was via a feeding tube, which is quite common today. But people don't realize that she was not terminal, she was not actively dying, and that she was not hooked up to machines. She was just receiving food and hydration, just like we all are, and that was taken away from her. And our family had to sit back and watch my sister die over a period of 2 weeks, and there was nothing that we could do to help her.
Yeah, I mean, that bottom line, the astounding reality of all this is you had to watch someone starve to death, someone who wasn't dying in the first place.
Right. And something, removing of food and hydration is happening every single day in our country. And it's because food and hydration now is now looked upon as medical treatment, artificial life support, at least in the eyes of the law. And for that reason, it is being taken away from those that have cognitive disabilities, just like Terry. And for me, when I found this out and realized this, it's something that I can't believe that we're allowing this to happen in our country today, and really throughout the world.
So the difference between persistent vegetative state and brain dead is what?
Well, first of all, I don't even like this diagnosis, persistent vegetative state, and I wish I had time to really go into it. It was a diagnosis, I believe, created by doctors in order to make it easier to kill people like my sister, dehumanize them, take away their personhood. But what it is, it's a diagnosis where someone is not in a coma and they're not brain dead. They're somewhere in between. But I find it offensive. I refer to it as the V word because often people refer to my sister as a vegetable. And she was a woman who had a disability, had a cognitive disability, and needed the love and compassion of us to care for her.
You know, my wife and I, at the end of watching this documentary, we were left with the nagging question, how could something like this happen after seeing what we just saw? Just watching that 2001 footage of Terry where she smiled. When your mom came in the room, there was reaction. And then somebody, I don't know who it was in the back, or might have been you, said, can you open your eyes? Can you open your eyes, Terry? And her eyes went wide, wide open. And I'm just, you know, again, we were left with that nagging question of how did something like this happen to somebody who was not dying or indeed in this persistent vegetative state or brain dead or whatever. I mean, there was reaction. There was response. There was connection.
Right. That's one of the things that you mentioned earlier about the media and how they distorted Terry's condition. She was very much alive, very much responsive, and really the media gave you this perception that she was, by using terms like brain dead and vegetable, gave you this perception that she was in this condition, which she wasn't. But I think you have to be careful because we love Terry the way she was, it didn't matter what she was able to do or not be able to do. And I think much of our culture today puts too much emphasis on the quality of life and what a person can and cannot do. You know, the one question I get asked all the time, and I think it's a question that's going to be that is asked. It's a very powerful question, and it's a question that's being used to rationalize the killing of people like my sister. And that's who would want to live this way, because certainly nobody would choose to live with a disability if they had the choice. But the fact of the matter is, Mr. Marshall, is that there are people living this way. Tens of thousands estimate. They estimate tens of thousands of people are living in conditions similar and even worse than Terry. So the question really is, what are we going to do to care for these people? Because we have two choices. We continue to rationalize killing them like they did my sister, or we do what I believe we're called to do as humans, as human beings and as Christians, and that's to care for these people.
We're on the phone with Bobby Schindler, and Bobby, of course, is the brother of euthanasia victim Terry Schindler Schiavo. And the ShivoStory.com is the website, theshivostory.com. You certainly want to go to that website, find out more information, get the DVD. I think it would be a brilliant thing to play at your local churches or in your home groups. It would provoke a lot of healthy discussion, and I think that's what needs to be happening around this issue. The discussions still need to rage on, because I don't understand, with a ton of questions still surrounding Terry's situation, why in the world the judge would rule so clearly in a direction that was not so clear. Does that make any sense?
Well, it still doesn't, and that's probably the one question. I do a considerable amount of speaking across the country and even outside the country, and that's probably the one question I get asked over and over again is, how can a judge make this ruling when there was a family that was so willing and wanting to care for Terry, particularly with a estranged husband who had these enormous conflicts of interest, the money he was going to inherit upon Terry's death, the fact that he had been living with and engaged to another woman since 1994, who he eventually fathered two children with while still being married to Terry, and the fact that Terry's so-called wishes took 8 years to surface. But despite this, the judge kept rubber-stamping every decision that was made in order to do harm to my sister or kill my sister. It didn't make sense, and to this day it doesn't make sense.
You know, one thing that you wanted to be clear on, and I'm not sure if you still feel this way, and this is going to be, maybe not as touchy for you now that some time has gone by, but I can imagine how sensitive it would have been to talk about this, but yet you forced yourself to, because people needed to know that her death, unlike Michael said, was not peaceful. Correct?
It was absolutely horrific. It's something that I could never properly describe to anybody unless they were an eyewitness to watch my sister died to say. We don't even do this to animals, because in the state of Florida, and I'm sure this is throughout the country, if you do this to an animal, you go to jail. It's a felony if you dehydrate and starve an animal to death. We don't even do this to our most heinous criminals on death row because it's considered cruel and unusual punishment. But yet, an innocent disabled woman, we're dehydrating and starving to death. And as I said, it's something that's being done every day in our country, and it was the most horrifying experience that I've ever had to go through. And knowing that my parents have to live with this every day, watching their child die this way without able to help them, is just heart-wrenching. I can't even tell you how disturbing it is.
But Bobby, when Terry passed, were you in the room?
I was there just minutes before she died. We were thrown out of the room by orders of Michael, and would not allow us to be in the room when Terry died.
Yeah. See, my problem is I'm on a Christian radio station here, and there are things that I'd like to say that would probably make me lose a job here. But, I mean, that angers me. That is just, I mean, if that's not an indicator of this man's soul, then I don't know what is.
There was armed policemen in the room with us at all times. We had to go through three checkpoints of police before we could even visit my sister. And we were told at the beginning of this process, and my parents were told, if they try to do anything to give my sister comfort care, meaning any types of ice chips to be brought to her lips, that they would be arrested immediately.
Even wiping her forehead with a cool cloth or something like that.
We could do nothing. We had to go in there empty-handed. We could not take anything in that room with us that they were taking from us. They even hit us with metal detectors before we entered Terry's room. And when you tell people that this type of thing happened in the United States of America, they can't believe it. But I tell people all the time what our family went through, and people simply can't believe that this is happening in our country.
Okay, Bobby, so I guess ultimately from a spiritual point of view, I mean, I don't know where you're at spiritually. I don't know whether you're a Jesus guy or Catholic or Jewish or whatever. At this point, it doesn't matter. I want to ask you about the forgiveness aspect of this. I mean, let's talk about Judge Greer as well as Michael. But there's two guys who are really to blame for this. And how do you process forgiveness?
Well, it's very difficult, and I am I'm Catholic, and I'm very, my faith is very strong, and it's become stronger through all this process, and it's very difficult, because there are days, and it's only going to be through God's grace where I find forgiveness, and there are days where I feel in my heart that I can find it, and other days I get very angry. But I think it's important to pray for the conversion of these people behind it. And there was more people besides Michael and Judge Greer, although they were the primary people involved in this. His attorney, George Felix, was another person responsible for my sister's killing. But can you imagine, Mr. Marshall, if they had a conversion and began speaking out about what they did?
What an impact that would be.
Right. How powerful their voices would be if they said what they did was wrong. So we have to pray for their conversions, and I have to continue to pray for forgiveness, because it's hard living with the anger.
You're quite an encouragement. You really are. I mean, even just your understanding that at the best of times it's hard to forgive, let alone a situation like this. And I think that's where the supernatural reliance comes in. I mean, you want evidence that there's a God. It's hard to see sometimes, but when you hear your story and what a right you have to be vindictive, and yet you've willingly surrendered yourself back to your Creator, saying, this is not right. This revenge stuff is going to eat me up, and I can't forgive. Yet I can't forgive, so you're going to have to do this. I mean, that's evidence that God is actually working in your life. That's pretty amazing.
Well, thank you. It's all because of him, and I have to hand it over to him. And it's what I focus on. And there are tough days. It's a very emotional dealing with this day to day. And really, Mr. Marshall, I think it's one of the things that keeps me going, of course, is my sister and what she went through. But really just telling people the urgency of what's happening in our country and how we're there's such a strong push now occurring for euthanasia, and how many of our doctors in our country have really shifted, really from a do no harm and preserve life to making life and death decisions based on what a person can or cannot do. And I find it so frightening that so many people are apathetic in regards to this issue.
Bobby, why was your dad not in this documentary, really? There was no footage of him speaking out. We haven't heard much from him. Is he just the way he's wired, he'd rather be behind the scenes, or is there something else behind this?
Well, it's part of it, but he had a stroke almost 2 years ago.
Okay.
And although he's doing okay, he lost a lot of strength on his right side, and he still has a slight speech slur, and I think he's very self-conscious.
Self-conscious,
about that.
Sure. No, that makes sense. Yeah, that's understandable.
For my parents, this is something that's killed them. I mean, it killed them right along with Terry, and my parents have never been the same ever since.
Oh, man. Okay, well, in saying goodbye here, I mean, we need to learn from this as people. And I have a friend, a guy who does some advertising on the show here. He prepares people's wills and estates and that sort of thing. And there's some documentation that says, you know, should X, Y, or Z happen to me, this is what I'd like the medical profession to do, or I'd like my family to do. So what advice do you give to us as people so that we don't end up ourselves in the same situation your sister did? I mean, even just that the sentence of, you know, we joke around as guys, maybe, you know, having a pint here and there, and somebody might say, well, if that ever happened to me, you know, just put a bullet in me. I don't want to be living like that. You know, we use that kind of terminology, and I'm asking you for some help to reshape our thinking here, Bobby.
Well, it's easy to make the decisions when you're healthy, but when you do become disabled, or suffer some type of disability, your thinking may change significantly. We've come in contact with people who have had a shift in heart where they've said the same thing, and after their traumatic brain injury, want very much to live. So you have to be very careful with what you put down on paper. In fact, I'm not an attorney, but in consulting with an attorney, I've been told that a healthcare proxy is much more important or perhaps even safer, where someone would speak, you assign somebody that would speak for you in case you ever do become incapacitated, either for a short time or a long period of time. And that can be more than one person, a healthcare proxy. What I've been told, and again, I'm not an attorney, but I've been told that a healthcare proxy perhaps could be safer for you and protect you better than that of an advanced directive.
The website is theshivostory.com, and Shivo is spelled S-C-H-I-A-V-O. TheShivoStory.com. It is a brilliant documentary. Of course, many of you would know Johnny Erickson Tata. She is the host of this. She does an excellent job, but as I've said already at the beginning of this interview, Bobby, you hold your own. You are a very clear communicator, and I love your heart, man. Thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate it, Bobby.
Well, thank you so much. And can I give the website of our foundation so people can go and learn more
please.
About this
yeah,
issue?
Please, please.
You can go to TerryShivo.com. It's Terry with an I, Terry Shivo, Shivo with a C. com. And I urge people to go, and there's all different, you can also order the DVD on our website and other ways that you can support our foundation, because we really need supporters to help us, because it's tough raising awareness on this issue, because there is so much apathy. But thank you again for having me. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Bobby. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you again maybe in the future, I hope, because I think this story is continuing to unfold, and you're definitely a driving force behind it. So thanks again, Bobby.
It'd be my pleasure, and thank you for your ministry. God bless you.
Bye-bye. Bobby Schindler, brother of euthanasia victim Terry Schiavo. Boy, what a story, huh? Okay, let's take a short break, and we're going to come back with our free-for-all. Folks, if you didn't get through in an earlier talkback segment, you want to give us a call, you need to vent about a guest we had today, well, now's your opportunity. Call in and talk about whatever you'd like, or just sit back and enjoy some chuckles and some sort of random ramblings here on the Drew Marshall Show. We'll finish it off. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the show that talks about stuff the others can't, don't, or won't. The Drew Marshall Show on Joy 1250.